All right, moving into the food and drink category. Nominees are The Beer Download, Crimes Against Food, Hopcast, My Life as a Foodie, New Brew Thursday, Should I Drink That? The Nutrition Diva, The Scotch Cast, that's my favorite, The Splendid Table, The Wine Library TV. And the winner of the 2010 Food and Drink category is My Life as a Foodie. And the winner of the 2010 Food and Drink category is The Beer Download.
Cheap, lying, no good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Hey everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Hope you all had a great holiday. I'm sure you're ready to see the new year in. It's our end of the year show. Got a ton to talk about on today's show, so I'm not going to dick around. Nathan Lyon's going to be calling into the show later to promote his new book, Sam the Clam. It's a children's book, a story he wrote when he was in high school. And he's got a great story to share with us about how his mother found the story and how they brought it to where it is now in print and in bookstores. We've got a new website for My Life as a Foodie. Very proud of it. We just launched it this morning. It's ready to roll now. It might even be, you know, still kind of propagating through the internet. So there's some domain changes that needed to be made and stuff. I wanted to make sure I got this last episode in the can before the year ran out. And I've kind of been doing multiple things at once. But it's been a work in progress. It's been a really busy year. And 2011 is going to be even busier. The way the new site is actually lined up, it allows me to bring more to the table a lot more often. Shorter things, littler things, but things that I do find important and want to talk about. I made the decision to take not only the podcast, but the blog to a different level. I'm going to start selling advertising on the site, and I may start promoting items that I feel lend themselves to My Life as a Foodie. Now, when I started running these ads through Google, a lot of them came up and had nothing to do with food. Now, I need to kind of get that figured out. But right now, I'm trying to focus everything on food as much as I can. I'm not going to become a whore, all right, and a pitchman here. So you don't have to worry about me becoming a huge pain in the ass about this whole thing. Well, not more of a pain in the ass than I already am. But, you know, those of you who listen regularly know what a pain in the ass I am anyway, and you're used to it. So it should be a no-brainer for you. Katrina laid some serious gifts on me this Christmas. Seriously, stuff that I need to take my show and the blog to this new level. And so I've got new equipment. I've got new stuff. I want my podcasts to be more focused, very topic-driven. So I might do smaller shows, all right, that are more focused. So like if I name the podcast like Episode 68, Sam the Clam, you can rest assured that I won't be bullshitting for 5 minutes like I am right now about other crap. Instead, Sam the Clam would be the main focus, with maybe a few other things thrown in, but basically shorter episodes that are more focused. And they'll be doing it more often. So maybe I might do three or four a month instead of just the two. Beer reviews, maybe written audio or video reviews. I want to do more stuff with beer because people tend to like that stuff. And I'd like to do more video, shorter stuff. Produced just like it always has been by Zero Face, but quick, not dirty though. So more, faster, and better. All right? And listen, those of you who even act like you care, thank you. It's encouraging to me. Keep it up. I'll give you an Oscar. All right, so the business is out of the way. Let's drink some beer because it's the end of the year and we've got to drink. As I normally do every year around this time, I'm drinking Trader Joe's Vintage Ale, this being the 2010 version. Now, this beer tastes similar every year that I have it, and every year it blows me away for the price. And we're talking $5 to $6 for a 750-milliliter bottle. You're not going to find a better deal or a better beer. It's a deep, dark, rich, fruity, spicy Belgian dark ale. Unibrew from Quebec makes some really good Belgian beers. You know, it's kind of a French-Canadian type of thing. They make Maudite. That's awesome. Trépistolis. That's great. Terrible. All right, that one's terrible. Just dreadful. But when they're on, they're definitely on. And just as I raved about 2009's Vintage Ale, I'm going to rave about this one. Because if it did suck, you know, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you. I'm kind of like Joe at My Last Bite. I don't really do reviews. I'll tell you something I like. If I find it and I like it, I'll talk about it. I try to keep my views only to the things that I like to talk about, and the things that I find that are positive. This beer pours like a dark porter. It's got a nice white head on it here. The liquid's nearly opaque, and there's a really fluffy head on it. Now, hold on a second. So I kind of ran low. I'm going to pour some more in here. So, of course, I've been drinking, because that's what I do. Right. I got a little more in there. Cool. It's, I wouldn't really call it like a porter, in a sense, like, I don't know. I had Sierra Nevada's porter that poured like a dark nut brown. So, like, since when did porter become like a nut brown? I know it's supposed to be between a stout, you know, and a brown ale, but this looked more like a brown ale. Yeah, but it tasted good. I mean, there's a lot of chocolate malt and stuff in it, but interesting. This is a lot rubier. You smell it, right? You smell fall spices in the beer. Pumpkin pie, almost, but not quite. Just got some sharp orange peel or mace spice aromas. The yeast, I'm telling you something. Whoever captured this yeast or created it or mutated it or had anything to do with this yeast needs to be awarded a freaking medal, because it is genius. This is my all-time favorite yeast, and I know why yeast sells it as a Canadian-Belgian blend. That's the special Unibrew yeast, right? It's got this... If I had a beer, every time I had the beer and this yeast was in it, I would be the happiest man on the face of the earth. I could drink it every single time. That flavor, that spicy aroma, the cloves, a hit of juicy fruit, you know, just... like a big tropical banana flavor. I just dig it. I know I sound nerdy and stuff, but man, I love that flavor. I dig it in every single beer that has a flavor and an aroma like this. And when I taste it, I'm going to taste it now because I've been talking too much. Every time after smelling and then drinking this beer, here's where a beer simply hits it out of the park for me. In fact, I thought of a really good analogy for this because I thought about it before. To me, what separates really good coffee from bad coffee or even average coffee is coffee beans that actually taste as good or better than they smell. I mean, almost all coffee smells good, but when you taste it, you kind of feel like you've been tricked. Like it smelled good, but it tastes like crap. I can put my nose into a can of Folgers, right, and say, oh man, that smells like some really nice coffee. But don't make me a pot of Folgers, because I'm not going to drink that. Uban, Folgers, Maxwell House, it's all bullshit. That's the crap they serve, you know, at old folks' homes, hospital cafeterias, roadhouse diners. I'm a coffee snob, just as I am a beer snob. What I'm getting at is this. This beer tastes just like it smells, and it smells damned incredible. There's an effervescence here that is not too strong, but just strong enough to let you know that you are, after all, drinking a beer, right? So that's a big complaint about most people who are used to drinking, you know, pissy white, fuzzy beers. They'll say, that doesn't look like a beer, and it certainly doesn't taste like a beer. This is a beer, and they'll hand you a Budweiser. Now, you still know you're drinking a beer. Then that is where it kind of brings you right back. It just kills it in every single way imaginable. And I know I sound like I might be full of shit here, or that Trader Joe's maybe has pictures of me screwing a goat, but I'm forced to say really nice things about this beer every time I taste it. Dudes, Trader Joe's Vintage Ale Vertical Dinner that we did back in January this year really showed how strong the brewery is, because you can age these beers or drink them right out of the case. They taste fantastic right out of the bottle. They taste fantastic if you age them for 5-10 years. I don't know, 10 years might be a stretch. But if you can find this beer, buy a case. I think maybe that's why they make it so cheap. So you can buy a case. You can drink some now, save some for later. It ages incredibly well, and they know you're going to want to buy a lot of it, which is why they sell it, you know, as cheaply as they do. And I know that due to state restrictions with the ABC and all that other stuff, there might be some Trader Joe's out there that don't sell alcohol. Those are just state regulations. For those of you living in a state with Trader Joe's that has these restrictions and they don't sell alcohol, there is a way around this. Move. It's that simple, because Trader Joe's without an incredible lineup of good beer and wine sold inexpensively is not Trader Joe's as I know it. You obviously live in a state that's run by communists who hate life and hate freedom. So moving is really your only option.
Is that not the sweetest.
It is. And you are the quietest thing when you're sleeping. You are so quiet when you're
sleeping. And Jay, can I tell you how quick you are?
Well, thank you very much.
In and out before I knew it.
Well,
y'all.
There you go.
You're going to have the fat snake, I'll tell you.
Well, you know me pretty well.
Listen. Even though you were quick, you were there.
That's right, baby. That's it.
Okay.
Just show up. What's next?
You drove all the way to what part of New York?
There you go. George.
And you don't care about tail,
no,
making
I care
tail.
About Here we go.
All right, now make a little head.
Okay, make a little head. Okay.
Okay. And that's kind of hard. You kind of have to go in like that to make his head, you know?
All
see?
Right.
And we're going to do him like
this. Are you
this.
Good at making heads? Would that be your specialty?
And I know most of you are already aware, if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, My Life as a Foodie did not win in the food and drink category at the 2010 Podcast Awards. That dream sequence and the intro was indeed a dream sequence. That's how I heard it when I thought about what happened if I did indeed win. Am I disappointed that the show didn't win? No. Am I disappointed in myself for getting you guys all worked up and making you diligently vote for the show every day and drive traffic to the Podcast Awards website? Absolutely I am. And 2 years ago, when this first happened, I apologized. And I said, listen, I'm not going to put you all through this again. And here we are 2 years later, and I'm saying the same thing. I was going to go into this whole tirade about how rudely podcasters were being treated through this whole process. How Todd Cochran, who hosts this thing, has a voice for blogging, which makes it funny that he got into podcasting at all. And if you think I'm full of it, replay that intro and listen to his voice. He makes Kermit the Frog sound like Lou Rawls.
Should I drink that? The Nutrition Diva, the Scotch Cast, that's my favorite.
So the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, I sound like sour grapes. I don't have the energy for negative stuff or that. So what I'm going to do instead is talk about something beer-centric that I wanted to share with all of you. This guy, Lee, has been listening to my show, and he comments all the time on Twitter. I don't know the guy. Turns out he heard of me through Sean Paxton, who he follows. But he's been really supportive of the podcast. So I visited his website, hoptopia.com, and I realized that Hoptopia is a beer review site that not only is visually appealing, it's easy to navigate, and it's written pretty damn well. But on top of that, he's developed an accompanying iPhone and Android application that you can take with you on the road. And you don't need access to the internet to actually work with it. It's a free application that you can have on your iPhone or your Android. So the next time you're in the beer store and you see a beer that you're not 100% sure about, you can fire up Hoptopia and see what Lee has to say about that beer. I wanted to talk about this application and Lee's site, so I sent him an email and I asked him some questions and he got back to me so I could share some of this stuff with you. Lee launched Hoptopia.com last Halloween, which to me is a really good omen, because all good things to me are born on Halloween. Around April, he developed this iPhone app, and then the Android app just a little bit after that. And if you think this is just like any iPhone app, you should know that Hoptopia was selected by Sirius Eats recently as one of their top 10 must-have applications. And it's the only beer application that was on the list. And did I mention that it's free? All right, it's a free application that is loaded. It's a one-man show. Hoptopia is Lee and only Lee. It's all Lee all the time. What's interesting about this is there's an argument that a lot of beer nerds are going to make here. Why should I go to Hoptopia? We've got ratebeer.com. We've got Beer Advocate. We've got tons of these places. Well, for the same reason that I like Lee's site and the same reason why he even started it, Lee said that he finds the voices of individuals and small groups of food, beer, and wine critics a lot more interesting than these bot sites where everyone's kind of just chiming in and the whole site is generated by users of that site. He says, call me old-fashioned, but I like a little personality with my information, which I think kind of leads him to our show because there's personality and information. We call it infotainment. But this gets to the root of a lot of things for me here. I don't like Yelp because it's basically, you'll see a review page for one single restaurant. You'll have maybe 30 people leaving a write-up or a review, okay? Maybe 12, 15 of them might give it 5 stars. Then you're going to have 10 of them that give it 2. Now, how can you have people giving it 5 stars and then people giving it 2 stars? Everybody's going to have a different opinion. And when you don't know who you trust, you tend to get up and end up really, really confused, kind of, right? And you might end up not even going because you're not sure if you're going to get the 5-star experience or the 2-star experience. This is why I think Yelp is not helpful. Zagat is helpful because it's consistent. The same group of people reviewing. The same goes with beer review sites, movie sites, music sites. If I find a person who has the same taste that I do in beer, movies, or music, I'm going to go back to that person for his opinion on whatever it is that I'm trying to buy. Is it going to change my mind? Maybe, maybe not. But at least I know he's a straight shooter, and he's willing to give me an honest opinion. Roger Ebert is a movie critic that I admire and is pretty much on point with what I like to watch about 95% of the time. That is good enough for me. He can throw a stinker in anytime he wants. I know I can trust him. He's got 300 beers reviewed on Hoptopia already, okay? Lee expects to add another 300 next year. Think about this. Lee's drinking a new beer almost every day. That's dedication. Lee said about 6 or 7 years ago, he saw, you know, I'm starting to get into craft beer more and more. One day he's watching an episode of Wine Library TV, which is a pretty good video cast, by the way. Gary V, who's the host, said he was amazed at the lack of beer review sites, video or otherwise, that were run by actual individuals instead of these bot sites like Rate Beer or Beer Advocate. So Lee says, oh, what the hell? You know, I got the palate for it. My friends are telling me that I should do this anyway. I'll start one myself. So here's how it works. Lee adds reviews Monday through Friday. There's no strict update schedule. Some days he'll upload one. Some days he won't upload any. Sometimes he'll upload 3 of them. Both the website and the application is driven by one big database. The apps update with any new reviews every time they're open. On occasion, there's an update to the application that will need to be downloaded. But that's true for really any phone application, okay? So you're going to end up getting an update sometime. But here's where it beats Rate Beer or Beer Advocate or a site like that. And it was kind of a key question for me. Once the reviews are into the application on the phone, they stay there. They can be viewed offline or in areas where you have no cell reception. And here's the thing. If you're in a beer store, stores in general tend to be horrible for making, you know, phone calls in or even getting any kind of access because the buildings are made of materials that keep cell reception kind of down. So the app already has what it needs in it, so there's no need to go outside and to get reception and get an update. And this guy's leading a real beer life, too. His girlfriend, Stevie Caldora, is a president and founder of Ladies of Craft Beer, and they started homebrewing in July, and they actually think, did I pronounce her name wrong? Calderola. Sorry. I suck with names, man. You got to apologize. I apologize. Anyway, their long-term goal, they're thinking they might want to open a small brewery in Colorado. And a person like this sounds pretty dedicated. He'll probably do it. He's not a newbie to beer writing either. He contributed to Billy Broas's Beer Bucket. It was 50 Beers to Try Before You Die. It was a project. He used to write the beer news column for the Mutineer, but doesn't do that. Of course, he doesn't have time. But you know, Michael Jackson, he had to start somewhere too. And I think people who are passionate about beer like this should certainly have a voice and should get noticed. Now, I met him through Chef Sean Paxton, I said, has the show The Homebrewed Chef on the Brewing Network. And Sean is killing it. Seriously, maybe the best food beer podcast ever. And I'm not shitting you. I'm not just saying that. Hoptopia.com. At least try it out. All right, it's free. So enjoy it while it's free because it's not going to be free forever. I mean, if Serious Eats starts touting your application, you can rest assured that the demand is going to go through the roof, and pretty soon you're going to start looking at charging people for it, and who can blame them? And it'll be something else. I would pay for this if I had to, because to me, I found it invaluable. I have it in my phone, I have it in my my iPad, and I play with it constantly. It's great to have an invaluable tool if you're a beer nerd like me.
Every bite of Jonathan Kehoe's Egg McMuffin is a little bit tastier today. For several months, McDonald's menu is about all he could afford.
For the last 18 months, I've been unemployed.
And living with his parents. The 29-year-old former construction worker swung through the drive-thru a few weeks ago to get his nephew David a snack.
I wasn't sure that I wasn't even going to get something.
But an old favorite was back on the menu.
I saw the McRib and I said, wow, all right, I'll get a McRib.
Back at home, Jonathan peeled the Monopoly piece off his drink and found both Boardwalk and Park Place staring back at him. The combo meant $1 million.
I'm like, no way.
They knew right away. Jim looked at it and said, whoa, you know, and Johnny looked like, yeah. is it? He was just totally shocked. Nobody ever wins anything like that in our family. Who would?
Jonathan can't believe he simply dropped a couple bucks on a sandwich and a medium soda and walked away set for life.
To me, I mean, it's perfect. If I appropriate my money right, and I can be made in the shade for the rest of my life, really.
Family and friends gather for the big announcement, but there are no big plans for the newly acquired cash. Possibly pay off the car and pay back the parents.
They put me up for quite a while now, and I owe them a few bucks.
Oh, I'm glad for him now, because now he has something to help him get started on his own.
Take David on a camping trip.
So now that I got a little bit of money, maybe I'll go take him to Yellowstone or, you know, something like that.
Maybe get a little something to remember it all by.
Maybe even a McRib tattoo or something, you know?
You've seen him on Food Network, Discovery Health, Fit TV, and PBS. He was on the show earlier this year promoting his PBS show, Growing a Greener World, and now he's a celebrated children's book author. He's Nathan Lyon, and he's joining us again. Nathan, you there?
I am.
Thanks again for joining us, man.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
So, Sam the Clam, tell us about this book.
Well, the history... I mean, it's a cute book. I actually forgot that I wrote it. I wrote it back when I was 17, back in high school. And it got lost, you know, like all things do in your youth. And my mom found it either in my room or in the attic. And she found it. And when I went back east to cook and speak at a health expo back in Richmond, Virginia, went back to Arlington, and my mom said, "This is going to be your birthday present this year." This was February of last year. My birthday is in the end of February. And I was like, "I wrote that, Mom, but thanks." She was like, "No, I'm going to get it published for you."
Wow.
A fun little adventure children's book about Sam, who's a four-year-old clam, and his parents are farmers, and they farm kelp, and he gets swept away in this storm, and by meeting a lot of friends, like, you know, he meets an octopus, he meets a crab, he meets some squid, you know, and they help him find his way home, and together they solve a couple problems together.
Now, when you wrote the book, did you write it as a children's book, or were you just writing a story?
No, I wrote it as a children's book. To be honest, I don't even remember what class I wrote that for, but I'm sure I wrote it in a couple of days, and I was able to illustrate probably 15 pages, and then I had to give it to my brother, Craig, who illustrated 5 pages. So it was like a family, like a Lyon family team effort, so I can get it done in time for my class. But in hindsight, pardon me, it's a really, you know, it's kind of a cute story. I'm quite proud that I did it, and even more thankful that my mom was able to find it and throw it at a publishing house.
Now, what year was it that you wrote this?
I wrote it in 1988, 88 or 87, yeah.
So what we're basically saying here is that the story Finding Nemo was actually your idea and Pixar stole it.
Now, that would be sweet, brother. It certainly would be pretty sweet. Funny, at the book signing for Sam the Clam down at Long Beach, you were there.
I was.
I met one of the gentlemen who was there, kind of supporting Miss Long Beach 2011. He approached me, and he's kind of a bigwig in one of the movie houses, and he asked if I've ever approached anyone about it for a movie. I was like, "No, dude, I wrote this when I was 17."
Yeah, and that ship has sailed now, right?
Oh man, if I can get even 1% of that, that'd be fantastic. So we'll see. I'm not too attached to what happens with the book. I just see it as being this really fun thing that I forgot about. It's a rebirth of my youth and kind of a story that I was trying to tell at that time in my life. And thus far, everyone seems to really embrace it, as do I.
Well, your mother, you've got the mother of the year there. I mean, for a mother to do that for her son, that is just super supportive.
She's, you know, I can't lie. She's pretty awesome. My life, you know, my life has been pretty great. I don't have a lot of childhood issues going on. You know, I was the youngest of 3 boys, and perhaps that's the reason why I learned a lot by looking at the mistakes that my brothers did. And I was just like, "Don't do that. You'll get your ass spanked for that. Don't do that. You'll get grounded for that." And so my childhood was pretty smooth, and my relationship with my brothers and my parents are pretty tight. So I lucked out, and this is just one more manifestation to give thanks for my parents. You know, they're really cool. I'm lucky.
You know, when I hear stories like this, it makes me... I really wish I was adopted.
Well, you wouldn't be the person you are now, so they say in storybooks. You know, maybe you wouldn't have the amazing, deep appreciation for bacon like you do. Who knows? Or beer, for that matter.
Right. So, do we know where this book peaked on the New York Times bestseller list? Do we know that yet?
I don't think it's quite there. Maybe a few 100,000 books yet to be sold. But right now, it's just word of mouth. You know, through people I've met shooting different shows, just sending to a bunch of soccer moms out there through Twitter, through Facebook. You know, right now, it's just a grassroots thing that's going on. I haven't taken it as seriously. Perhaps if I had nothing else going on, I would take it more seriously. But I'm trying to push as much time and effort into my cookbook, which is going to be coming out in the spring. And I've been working on that book off and on for almost 5 years now.
Now, I was going to make all these jokes about, you know, your book and whether or not there were recipes in the back for, like, Clams Casino or chowder or anything like that.
Right. I don't know if that'd be sacrilege, but no, nothing of the sort. At least not for clams. Because I think the thing about my cookbook is that everyone seems to have their grandmother's recipe for chocolate chip cookies, you know? So I'm not going to throw out my recipe for chocolate chip cookies because most people will turn around and be like, it's really good, Nathan, but it's not like my grandmother's recipe. Or an apple pie recipe. Or, you know, the quintessential growing up, my grandmother had this amazing recipe for, you know, lamb meatballs. So I kind of fill in the cracks with stuff that I know really, really well, you know, fresh seasonal produce, and I make it into fairly simple recipes and meals that I think is approachable to everybody. You know, some of the ways that I've cooked in the past, depending upon which restaurant I've worked in, you know, we'll use some ingredients that are pretty, I don't want to say highbrow, but you can't find certain ingredients like kaffir lime leaf or lemongrass. You can't find certain things unless you live maybe on the coast or if, you know, if you're lucky enough to order some of that stuff. So I just go to the farmer's market and I'm like, I got lemons, I got limes, you know, I got some oranges, some greens, and let's rip it out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's essentially what the book's about. It's about really fresh, clean, simple cooking techniques that can be applicable to other things, like you know, like even just a warm lentil salad, you know, with some lemon and thyme seared salmon. It sounds fancy and it tastes delicious, but all you have to do is cook it until they're done. It's not like beans where you even have to let them soak. You know, just throw in some garlic, some cherry tomatoes, and some sherry vinaigrette, and you're done. And you have some amazing, amazing food in an almost ridiculously short amount of time.
Well, I think the key to really good cooking is simple cooking, because Mother Nature does all the work for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have preached that more than anyone else I know, which is, you know, if you start with a delicious tomato, what do you have to do to make it delicious? And the answer is, it is delicious. So there's really very little you have to do except try to keep the integrity of the tomato in your dish, and the dish speaks for itself, you know. And that's what all the chefs all around the world have learned. And now the processed food is getting pushed to the wayside, which makes me very happy. And, you know, fresh seasonal local produce comes back into fashion, which is very much the zeitgeist right now. It's an easy job. Like, my job is so easy. I just say, you know, this is how you store stuff, and this is how you pick stuff, you know, and this is how you cook with it. All I'm doing is sharing what my whole life has been about, which is, you know, gardening with my grandparents and learning how to cook and learning all I could from farmers for over a decade. And that's what's going to be in the book. It's going to be a lot of straightforward cooking. It's going to end up being really delicious.
When can we expect to see your cookbook in stores?
Well, it won't be in stores, just because part of my master plan, if you will, because I am all about local, you know, local and sustainable. I go to local mom-and-pop bookstores like we were last week. You know, local everything, locally produced everything. So, case in point, when this book comes out, I'm going on a three-month book tour all around the United States, stopping in farmers markets all around, everywhere. And when people write me through my website, I'll respond to whatever they want to know. You know, it could be about health, could be about food, could be about anything. And I'll respond and say, you know, if you have a farmers market near you that you really recommend, or a local pop restaurant that you really like that uses locally produced stuff, it could be local beer, local wine, local cheese, anything, tell me about it, because I want to go see those places. And when I go to farmers markets, that's where I'll be selling the book.
I think it's a great idea. Nobody has done this that I know of.
I mean, I just really want to meet people. I love people, and that's that was one of my main issues with being a chef in restaurants. It's not that I don't love being a chef. It's that I can't walk out with the food and sit next to you or sit in your lap and be like, taste that. Do you want to know how to make that? This is how I made that. You know, you can't do that times 230 people a night. And so when I'm in the back, I just found out after a handful of years of chefing that I'm too social. I just want to teach people as much as I can. And by going around the United States and learning from, you know, local chefs and local food vendors about what they grow, that makes me a better chef. And then with new shows coming out, I can teach America even more about how to, you know, make really delicious food. And that's my quest.
See, this goes back to that thing where I think you're going to break the mold here, because they've always said that those who can cook and those who can't teach. Well, you can cook and teach. So by going out there and doing this and teaching people how to cook and sharing the information that you have upstairs, because you've got an awful lot of information up there, I think it's a fantastic idea and almost like a public service.
Thank you. I mean, the thing about community, which is really, really important to me, be it farmers markets or my own family or even you know, you're part of my community, is that it doesn't matter how old you are, child psychology still applies. It applies to me, it applies to everyone. And what I want to do is I want to empower people with as much knowledge as possible. It's like therapy for the kitchen, you know? It's like if your stock isn't turning out very well, ask me a question, because chances are I'll know. Not because I went to culinary school, which I did, but it usually comes down to a technique or a certain ingredient that people either forget or they add it at the wrong time. And once you get it, like, you know, with kids, like, once you teach them, they got it. They can ride the bike for the rest of their lives. They can fish. They can garden. They can. They can cook. They can clean. And that's, I think, one of the best gifts you can give people, because it's sustainable. It's something that they can take with them for the rest of their lives.
So what is the timeline here? I mean, when are we expected to see this cookbook?
Probably May is my absolute deadline for when that thing needs to come out. I'm going to start the book tour here in Southern California at the farmers markets where I've worked for the last, you know, like almost the last 12, 13 years. And then I'll drive north in California. My first stop, and you're the first place where I've said this, Phil, is the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Whoa, breaking news.
You heard it here first, brother. I'm really, really lucky, and I'm extremely excited to participate. And it's at the very end of May, the 20th, 21st, 22nd, maybe the 19th as well. And I'll be going on the 22nd. I go on and cook and speak and share right after Alton Brown from Food Network. So I'm in pretty decent
company.
Yeah. I'm just really excited about that, because to have something I've worked on for so very long, you know, I'm doing my own writing, my own recipes, and my own photography. And I also don't know what of any other chef that has done that, because there's a lot of food writers out there. But I want my name to go behind every single recipe, and I want people to be really happy with it, and I think they will be.
That's great, man. Now, how many recipes are you looking at in this book? Do you have any idea how many?
I'm thinking probably about 120, which is a fair amount. And one of the things that's slowing me down is simply, well, the rain we've had here for the last 5 days, is I want to do all my photography with natural lighting. And people need photographs, you know. Cookbooks, if you ask your followers to say one of the best things about cookbooks, it's not necessarily that the recipes are anything different or anything out of left field, but I think it's kind of a storybook. It's a picture book, and I know a lot of people that'll buy a book just because the photos are so inspirational, but unfortunately, my cookbooks aren't as accessible as I hope mine will be, and so it ends up just kind of being by the bedside or on the coffee table.
You know, people are more apt to make a recipe of something that is accompanied by a picture rather than one that is not.
Absolutely. We want to know what it looks like. Otherwise, you might as well take your steak and your bacon and your burger and your salad and put it in the blender and just drink it, because it's really important that food looks good.
Dude, that sounds delicious. A burger, a steak, and bacon in a blender? Dude, you're a genius.
Thanks. You don't have to chew. Please, you can just throw it in a 40-ounce Camelback and just drink your lunch as you cycle along. Fantastic.
Okay, let me write this down. Burger, steak, bacon, blender. Hey, how are things going with Growing a Greener World on PBS? Are you guys still doing that show?
We are still doing that. Thanks for asking about that. We're really excited about season two, and it's coming down to crunch time. We start filming some of the cooking episodes and some of the places where we'll be visiting for season two as early as a month from right now. I think we start on the 23rd of January. I fly back to North Carolina, and then we go to Atlanta and a few other places in a week's time, and then I'll come back here and do a few more things, and then I fly back, and we continue cooking as the season goes on, because, you know, I just want things to be applicable to the season, so we can visit some of these places when it really is at the height. You know, everything has its own time, and everything has its own season. And I think once you start tinkering with that, then you have more grocery store mentality. You know, I want to represent nature as it's meant to be.
2011 is going to be pretty busy for you then.
It's going to be pretty busy, and I'm really looking forward to it, because what ends up happening, at least with me, you know, if I have nothing but time on my hands, I don't get as much accomplished. It's like being back in college when I had a full course load and I was a DJ at a club and on the radio station, and I was a varsity sport dude, and I got so much done. So if you want something done, you give it to a busy person. If you want nothing done, give it to someone with lots of time on their hands.
Right, that is absolutely true.
So I'm getting a lot done, and it's kind of stoking the fire even more so, because I have to fly back and shoot part of Growing a Greener World for 2011. That means I have less time on the cookbook, so every single second kind of counts. It's fun. I love it.
You know, 2010 has been an exciting year for me. I mean, I met you. I met Bobby Bogner. And through my blog and my podcast, I have made so many friends, and it has enriched my life, and so many positive things have happened to me because of my podcast, and you're a big part of that, and I really appreciate getting to know you this year and our friendship.
It's my pleasure. Yeah, I feel exactly the same. It's like you with Bobby, Average Betty. I mean, these, you know, you guys are my L.A. scene. You know, I even had lunch with, or kind of a brunch with Bobby this morning. So he liked to jab, really, you know, these playful, tough love jabs, and I embrace him for it.
Hey, listen, I'm going to go on a limb here and say he did not pick up the tab.
He did pick up the tab.
You're kidding.
No, but I threw down a big dead president on the wait staff for a tip, so I felt pretty good about that. He did. He's a good guy. He's a really good guy. He's a great father, and he's a good husband.
I know, man. I'm just breaking balls. He's Nathan Lyon. His book, Sam the Clam, is available in independent bookstores everywhere. Also on Amazon.com. Check mylifeasafoodie.com. I'll give you links to everything. Nathan, thank you, brother.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Until next time.
Hey, we got to get together sometime. Play some hoops, man.
Play some hoops or eat some bacon.
Or that, yeah. I'll come down there and steal your lunch money.
I can't wait. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Taco Bell's five ingredients are combined in a totally new way. It's the Onion Radio News. I'm Doyle Redland. Taco Bell unveiled the Grandito today, an exciting new arrangement of refried beans, lettuce, ground beef, cheese, and a tortilla, the five known food items available at the fast food chain. Taco Bell spokesman Walter Behrens.
The revolutionary new Grandito, with its ground beef on top of the cheese but under the beans, is configured like nothing you've ever eaten at Taco Bell.
The $30 million marketing campaign for the Grandito features the slogan, slightly rearranged ingredients, Grandito taste. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Listen, I'm going to sign off here, but I wanted to mention one more thing. Activate TV is the future of entertainment. That's all I'm going to tell you. I can tell you more later, but you need to check out ActivateTV.com. You remember VH1? You remember the pop-up videos, and they'd be playing videos, and they'd have pop-up trivia. Well, imagine you're watching No Reservations, or you're watching your favorite cooking show, and while you're watching it, trivia pops up, and it gives you options to click on. So if you're watching it, say, on YouTube or Hulu or whatever, but you've got a later on down the road, maybe a TV that is Activate TV compatible, you can use a remote to answer the questions. When you answer them correctly, you get points. You basically challenge your friends to do better than you did at this video. Now, you follow sports or you follow anything. If you're a guy, you know how competitive it is. Who knows more about football? Who knows more about baseball stats? Who's got the head for it? like it, I don't know, like it somehow makes you more of a man to know more about football history than anybody else. But guys are like this. We're stupid. What can I say? You know, we do it all the time, especially about beer. Beer nerds, forget about it. Cooking's getting even worse. For me, one of the things I liked about getting into food was that, oh man, I don't have to worry about these beer nerds and their knowledge of beer. Oh, it's even worse with food. It really is. And I find it's like that with everything. So you can't really get out of it. So if you like to compete, if you like to challenge your friends, check out ActivateTV.com. Sign up, try some videos. There's tons of stuff on there. You can check it out. I happen to be close to the person who developed this, and I'm telling you, it is going to be the future of entertainment, and it might very well save advertising. So check it out, ActivateTV.com. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight. And I'm going to say Happy New Year. As we wrap up 2010, I wanted to do what I did last year at this time and play some of my favorite clips from the show this year. But before I do, I want to thank Nathan Lyon for taking the time out with us. Visit mylifeasafoodie.com, the brand new super-duper website. We've got links to buy the book online. You can check out pictures from his book signing in Long Beach where I met him and had him sign copies of Sam the Clam for us. They actually sat him in a children's chair. It looked like, seriously, like a sixth grader. He fit half an ass cheek on this thing. It was a little kindergarten chair and a little mini table, but he's a champ, man. He just rolls with everything and had a good time with it. Thanks to CNN and SiriusEats.com for the audio. Music in this episode by Static X, Rev Theory, and James Newton Howard. You can get links to all the music on our website, mylifeisafoodie.com. Listen, personally, 2011 is going to be challenging. Someone very close to me is going to have some serious challenges, and we're going to see through this, and we're going to fight through, and we're going to have a great year. We're going to make a positive year out of it, and I want you to make a positive year out of it, too. Have a happy new year, everybody. We'll see you on the other side. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Okay, Nathan from Phoenix, he wrote in, "Yo, Phil, before these PETA nuts and animal activists start complaining about elephants being forced to dance and perform tricks at the circus, they should really think about the poor elephants roaming the plains of Africa bored shitless because they've got nothing to do."
Just a heads up that a lot of people who care about animal rights really care about cute animal rights.
Yeah, it's true, because catfish are pretty ugly.
Absolutely.
So if you're at the bottom of the food chain, it's no big deal.
Right, people don't seem to care about it nearly as much.
I think people would rather think that we have farms where pork chops walk around. They don't want to face the fact that cute little piggy got snuffed out in order to produce that nice pork chop or bratwurst that people enjoy so much.
Exactly right.
And at the risk of sounding sexist, which I'm not.
Sure. This is a good way to start any sentence, by the way.
How's that segue? Some of you are going to ask me this question. I'll go ahead and tell you now. About the next day. The answer is yes. Right? I think what I told Katrina is it felt like Casper the Unfriendly Ghost Pepper was f***ing me in the ass.
McMullen says it all started when she tried to return a snack wrap. She says it was cold and that the female employee would only give her a cheeseburger.
"No, ma'am, I didn't ask for that. And that ain't what I paid for. But I didn't, and just how I'm coming to you and talking to you, how I'm telling you, this is exactly how I came to her."
When are we going to start pointing out that it's asked, not axed? Stop sounding like a dumbass. And stop eating McDonald's. Okay, Dan from Baltimore writes, "Hey Phil, I know you've got a real hard-on for fast food restaurants like McDonald's and Burger King. So I'm going to tell you something. I'm really fed up with the counter jockeys that work at these places who keep telling me sorry about your weight. Who the hell are these people to point this out? Don't they know I have feelings, or do they think because I'm fat I have thick skin?"
It's like, I can compete with fast food, meaning, you know, a burger is a buck. But that's not even a burger. It's mostly just filling stuff. But I can get you a big bag of barley for $1.69 with homemade stock, which costs me nothing because I already got stuff in my fridge.
Nathan, you bring the barley, I'll bring the hops. We'll be in business, buddy.
That, my friend, is a different show. but that also, I'm just talking about beer. That's Americana.
You know, you've got a great set, a great crew, the lighting and photography is great, and you're so comfortable in front of the camera.
Well, thanks. The thing about being comfortable in front of the camera, like I've done, this is back in college and a little bit out here in Los Angeles, I've done theater only because I'm the youngest of three boys and I love attention. I'm old enough. I'm a grown-ass man, Phil, I can say that.
The places that I like to hang out, there's this particular area in Burbank where I can act out like my entire fantasy life. There's an Olive Garden, an Outback Steakhouse, and a Krispy Kreme Donuts.
Cheese biscuits? Krispy Kreme Donuts? You've seen this chick. Does it look like she's eating cheese biscuits and donuts? I mean, maybe she is, but she's having her finger for dessert afterward. And I'm sorry. I'm just saying, unless she's got the metabolism of a rabbit, she's not eating that stuff. At least not all the time. I mean, those restaurants make people fat. And listen, she's batshit crazy, too. I mean, she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Every time you read an article about her, she's saying some weird crap about how she figures she'll die young and tragic, and how Brian Austin Green, who she's dating, how he gets on her nerves, to the point where sometimes she thinks if she had a gun, she'd shoot him in the leg. Dude, if I was dating some girl, I don't care how hot she is, if she said that crap in an interview, I'm leaving freaking tracks, kid. Run, dude. That is a red flag. She goes, are you still watching Food Network? And I said, of course. And she said, have you seen A Crook's Tour? And I said, no, I haven't seen A Crook's Tour. And she goes, the guy, the host,
yeah,
he reminds me of you. He's sarcastic and negative.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gee, thanks, bitch. What the fuck was that supposed to mean? All right, now we're going to take one shot of this tequila and toss that in the pan. Crank up the flame now here, all right? Get the stuff bubbling. Burn that alcohol off. Now, while that's happening, we're going to take another shot here. And we're going to drink it. Cheers. Listen, this is not a kid's show. And here's the other thing. People call me all the time. They'll email me and say, my kid loves your show. And I'll go, oh, great. Then I'll think, oh, shit. You know? Because there's a lot of content.
Sure.
Gee, wasn't I talking about eating last week? You know, it was ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, so funny. I, but this, maybe this might be one you might want to have the kids sit out.
Right, right. Well, it's like watching No Reservations and Kitchen Nightmares in Brazil. None of it's bleeped out.
Is that true?
It's all raw. True.
So what, is it okay to curse on TV over there?
There's soft porn after 11 p.m.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, there's soft porn after 11 p.m. here on Cinemax.
But no, this is network TV.
Really?
Yeah, just common cable, dude.
Dude, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh, serious. Every night.
Punch my ticket.
Let me get that visa.
Wow.
Yeah, really. No, it's just kind of goes along with the culture down there.
Okay, Connie from Branson, Missouri wrote to us, I've been a strict vegetarian for moral reasons for the last 20 years. However, I've recently gotten a serious craving for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Would it be ethical for me to eat a chicken leg if, for example, the chicken lost its leg in a chicken fight or through other natural causes? What do you think about this? Okay, so you had started telling me about this, and then we got a little off track, and then I heard some of this story from somebody else, and I thought it was a rumor. Did you tell me that for a while there, whenever you would travel to North Carolina on business, that you and your business partner would stop off at Paula Deen's restaurant?
We did.
Okay, because I thought you guys were joking about going there.
Oh, serious. Every night.
Every night?
It's good. It's really cheap.
Dude, I know, but it's Paula Deen, man. I can't believe this. Why eat there of all places? I mean, did the fact that she likes to deep fry butter, did that attract you there?
No, it didn't. Because, I mean, I had a lot of other things that kind of drew me that way, but...
But you secretly love her food?
No.
You secretly love the Food Network?
No.
There wasn't any other place open?
No.
Dude, what is it? Do you find her attractive?
Uh-huh.
Seriously?
Sure.
I can't believe that you ate that crap that she cooks.
Fast food is good food. It really is. There's a reason why we love it, because it tastes good.
So that story I heard was true. You went there, you ordered the fried butter sandwich, you asked her for her autograph, and then she asked you back to your place and you guys made dinner together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it came out great.
Dude, you are one twisted bastard.
Fuck you.
What?
Fuck you. Wow.
Oh, come on, man. You tapped that big fat Kentucky Fried ass,
oh,
didn't you?
Oh, yeah, baby. Smack, smack. That's unbelievable. You can basically have anybody say anything you want.
Listen, oh my God. Let this be a lesson to anybody who wants to come on My Life.
That's right.
Me.
Yeah. Your nothing audio, is sacred.
Your audio belongs to me.
That's right. You're mine, bitch.
We had another conversation. You wouldn't want to hear this one.
Oh, no. Please. Oh, boy.
Paula Deen, huh?
Yeah, baby.
Hey, y'all.
Bring it on, y'all. Yeah, y'all, y'all, y'all.
Did he? Holy shit. Thomas Keller's breaking my balls for holding a huge turquoise purse.
Between wrong and right, and I know there is a part of me that I try to hide. fight. I keep holding on too tight, running away from the world outside. Now I am calling, hoping you'll hear me. We all need somebody to believe in something. Then I won't fear this when I am falling. We all need somebody that can mend these broken bones. The simple life, and I am holding my head high in the rising tide. And I can win, and I can fight. I keep holding on too tight, running away from the world outside. Now I am calling, hoping you.
Mino Reiki.
Excuse me?
Mino Reiki.